to some of the issues that are currently in the news and will be in the coming week. And it's expected that President Obama will take executive action to grant some form of permanent status for undocumented migrants. And as Keith mentioned, you practiced law for a long time. You clerked for Justice Rehnquist. And you said, we want, in a letter to some of others, we want immigration to pass, but only if it fixes a broken system. So if President Obama, as expected, does make executive action, what recourse do you have? What do you think will occur? And as a follow-up question, what do we do about the 12 million undocumented immigrant migrants in Illinois?
Let me start with a follow-up question and talk about just immigration generally. I think there is a lot of bipartisan agreement on immigration outside of Washington. Outside of Washington, there is enormous bipartisan agreement that we've got to get serious about securing our borders and about stopping the problem dealing with immigration. Overwhelming consensus outside of Washington. There is also very substantial bipartisan agreement that we need to improve and streamline legal immigration. That we need to remain a nation that doesn't just welcome, but that celebrates legal immigrants. What Reagan called legal immigrants, Americans by choice. If we focus on areas of bipartisan agreement, I will note there is no stronger advocate of legal immigration in the U.S. than I am. If we focused on the areas of bipartisan agreement, we could craft legislation that could sail through Congress. The problem is right now that's not what Washington's doing. And what the White House and what the Senate Democrats did the last 2 years is they deliberately focused on the most divisive and partisan aspects of this issue. And in particular, you asked about the president's proposed amnesty. The American people don't support it. And in fact, this last election was in a very real sense a referendum on it. A couple months before the election, the president announced he intended to unilaterally grant amnesty to 4 or 5 million more people who were here than him. Much to the great dismay of Senate Democrats. In fact, Senate Democrats asked him, please hold off, don't do this before the election because we don't think the voters will like it. Well, as a result of the announcement, if you look at what the issues in this last election were, what the Senate candidates campaigned on, there were two issues that dominated just about every race in the country. Number one was Obamacare. It was the number one issue in almost every Senate race in the country. Stopping the disastrous effects of Obamacare. And number two was stopping the president's amnesty. And the result was fairly breathtaking. I mean, it was a tidal wave. After Louisiana in a few weeks, I think the Republicans will end up having picked up 9 seats. There will be a total of 12 Republican freshmen coming in January. And not only that, you look at gubernatorial races in states like Illinois, Massachusetts, Maryland. I mean, these are bright blue states where the voters said, we don't agree with the path we're on, and amnesty was a big part of it.
So what tools do you have if the president announces what he's going to do?
You know, look, it is a complicated question because we don't know the answer to exactly what Obama is going to do. He has announced, or actually leaked, general terms, but we don't know the specifics. In my view, Congress should do everything humanly possible to prevent the president from illegally granting amnesty. Now listen, I support immigration reform. I've introduced legislation to reform our immigration system, to improve our legal immigration system, to improve border security, to make the system work better. We're not going to get it with a president who right now is angry and defiant. But if you look at the press conference the president held after the election, where the American people had resoundingly said, we don't like the path we're on, the president essentially said to the voters to heck with you.
But let's go back because you said you feel a real obligation that something needs to be done. What are the options? And I think a lot of people here would say, will you shut the government down again?
I would note that that question bears a lot in common with the proverbial question, do you stop feeding the wife? I don't agree with the premise of the question. If you look at the battle over Obamacare a year ago, I did not support the shutdown. I repeatedly said we should not support shutdown. I repeatedly voted to fund the government. At every stage in that fight, I said, do not shut down the government. So why didn't we have a shutdown? The answer is simple. We had a shutdown because President Obama and Harry Reid forced a shutdown. And if you recall, they said publicly at the time, they're not shy about it, they said, listen, we think a shutdown benefits Democrats politically because we are quite confident that the press will blame the shutdown on Republicans and it'll hurt Republicans. So what happened? The reason we had a shutdown is President Obama and Harry Reid said, we are unwilling to negotiate or compromise on anything. And we're going to force a shutdown. I went to the Senate floor repeatedly and brought up the House passed bill after bill after bill to fund critical government priorities, to fund the VA, to fund NIH and medical research. I went to the Senate floor and said, let's bring up the legislation, let's fund the VA. It doesn't mention Obamacare. Has nothing to do with Obamacare. Let's just take care of our vets. Can't we come together in a bipartisan manner to take care of our vets? The Democrats stood up and objected. No. We want the VA shut down. Why? Because we want to hold the VA hostage to force Obamacare policies. NIH. You may recall the exchange where Harry Reid was asked by CNN reporter, Dana Bash. She said, Dana talked about a young girl with cancer who was relying on cancer research from the NIH. The NIH was shut down. The House had passed legislation, fund the NIH. Clean, didn't mention a word about Obamacare, just said, let's fund the NIH. We all agree. And then I asked Harry Reid, well, why would you want to deny this little girl the cancer research she depends on? And Harry Reid looked at her and said, why should I care about a 10-year-old girl with cancer? And by the way, as cold and callous as that is, if you don't believe that exchange, go home and Google it, because it was a stunning exchange. And yet, despite the fact that we were repeatedly pushing to fund stuff, a whole lot of folks in the press nonetheless followed the talking points from the White House of blaming it on Republicans.
Now, we may come back to the question I asked, what we would do. What recourse you have? One of our members said, how do you define border security, and what specifically would meet your definition of adequate security?
So, when the Senate was considering the annual report, which I did not support, I think it was a bad thing, it was a main problem, I introduced a series of amendments designed to improve it. And I introduced five different amendments in the committee designed to actually fix the problem. One of them was directly border security. What it would have done, I spent a fair amount of time down at the border, visiting with law enforcement, visiting with local officials, visiting with
speak louder, please.
I spent a lot of time down the border visiting with law enforcement, visiting with local officials. The consistent answer you get on board is the most important tool they need is boots on the ground. So the legislation I introduced would triple border. It would increase fourfold the number of assets, fixed-wing aircraft, rotary-wing aircraft, technology that they can use to detect penetration. It would put in place, which it's, as has been required by federal law for many years, biometric tests on exit and entry. 40% of illegal immigration is not across the border. It's visa overstays. You've got to address that. It would also put in place a security verify system on the employment side. All of those together are a comprehensive effort to actually secure the border. Now you gotta combine that with two other amendments I introduced on legal immigration. One was focused on legal immigration generally. It took the current cap of 675,000 legal immigrants. It doubled it to 1.35 million. It took the myriad categories, the massive complications, the cost, the bureaucracy involved in coming legally, and it dramatically simplified and streamlined the process to make it less burdensome, less time-consuming. It also eliminated, right now we have per-country caps that end up discriminating against nations like Mexico, like China, like India. If you're trying to come on a sibling visa for Mexico, It can take 10 to 20 years to come legally because of the per country caps. So the legislation I introduced eliminated the per country caps so we stopped discriminating against countries where there's significant desire to come anywhere. Now when I introduced that legislation, every single Senate Democrat and Senate Judiciary Committee voted against it. Now part of the way you solve the problem of illegal immigration is you fix the legal system so that there is a mechanism that you could come consistent with rule of law following the rules. I am the child of an immigrant who came legally to America seeking the American dream, and we need to fix that system. You know, another amendment that I introduced on the legal immigration side focused on H-1B visas, temporary high-skilled workers. The current cap is 65,000. The Gang of Eight bill made some modest improvement and increased it from 65,000 to 110,000. Problem is, that's not nearly high enough. The data are compelling. Every H-1B visa holder who comes over produces 1.8 American jobs. And right now, we're taking some of the most brilliant graduate students from across the world. We're training them in our universities. They're getting graduate degrees, PhDs in math and science and engineering. And then we send them back to their countries where they start businesses, they create jobs, and they compete against us or Europe or Canada. Or Europe or Canada or anywhere else other than here. That doesn't make any sense. So I introduced legislation to increase the H-1B cap fivefold. From 65,000 to 325,000. And once again, every single Senate Democrat and Senate Judiciary Committee voted against it.
Is this legislation you put forth again?
Yes. It's legislation I support and support emphatically. And there was a revealing moment. So Chuck Schumer, what I introduced, and he responded, and he essentially said, listen, we cut a deal. We cut a deal with the union bosses. We can't change them. And I would note all of these Senate Democrats go out every year to Silicon Valley. They tell all the techies, hey, we're fighting for H-1B visas. We're fighting for high-tech visas. And I'll tell you, the tech community, God love them, have not been involved in the political process terribly long. For a long time, high-tech focused on innovation, focused on what was happening there, ignored Washington. That started to change. But I think what a lot of folks in the tech community don't yet realize is you're not doing someone a favor if you take their top legislative priority and you tie it to the mast of a sinking ship. We could raise H-1B visas tomorrow. The votes are there. Every or almost every Republican would support it. The only people blocking it are the Democrats. And what the White House has told tech is we're fighting for more H-1B visas, but we're conditioning it on a pathway to citizenship for those who are here illegally, and we know for a fact the votes are not there in Congress, so that's never going to pass. That's not doing someone a favor if you inject a poison pill that you know to 100% certainty is going to fail.
Well, let's move over to the Middle East. When I visited with you in your office, you were just getting ready to go to Israel. Secretary Kerry has traveled there 11 times. He's in the region today. Last April, you called for the Secretary's resignation over a statement he made concerning what would happen if the two-state solution was not reached. What do you see now as the role of the United States, and what's the path?